I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm using NYX.
Okay. For the benefit of the listener, I am staring right down the webcam. Who are you and what have you done with Alan?
I think the Martin virus has come. So I recently changed job and I got a new laptop from the new job. I was offered either a 14-inch laptop or a 16-inch laptop, and I chose a 16-inch laptop. And rather than install all the software like a crazy person and just go around like getting it all from various places, I thought, do you know what? I've heard from smart people that NYX is a good way to install software and deploy it on a machine. And later I might switch to another machine and I could use that same config and deploy all the same applications that I'm familiar with and have a record of them in a configuration file somewhere and deploy them again on a different machine and maybe another machine I might do it on. So I feel like I'm finally getting to grips with this whole having the deployment of applications rather than me randomly clicking on debs and executables and DMGs or whatever and, you know, waiting for the thing to install. It's been a long time coming, but I think I'm finally here.
It's been 3 years, in actual fact. So I've got to ask, you know, without spoiling this too much, I've helped with this, but I don't actually know what caused you to decide to do this.
Yeah, I know. It's weird, isn't it? I left one job where I handed the laptop back and I looked at all the software on it and I thought, oh no, I need all of this. I need a lot of this. So my new employer gave me a new laptop before I'd actually started my employment proper. And so I had these two laptops side by side, looking at the one I had for my previous job and the one for the new job. And I thought, oh, I've got to get all those bits that are on that one onto this one. I've got to make a big list of all the software that's on there that I remember and all the little utilities I've installed and all the little things I've added with Brew and utilities I've got and installed like GH and all those little scripts that I've got buried places that I do things with and stuff like Image Magic and like all those other bits and bobs that I know I'm going to need. And I'm basically thinking about future Alan, where future Alan has learned something, which is a bit of NYX, and uses that so that the next machine I get, I'm actually planning for the machine after the one I've just received. Now, I've only had this machine 2 days. I've only been in the job 2 days, but I've had the machine a little while longer, over a week longer than that. And so I've had a bit of time to craft a little bit of NYX with a lot of Martin's help. And I'm not sure, other than thinking this would be a good idea, I'd like to learn something new and I want to pay it forward to Popey Future, that he can go, ah, oh, so glad that that guy made that list and did it in a configurable way. So, you know, if I either get a laptop upgrade or buy a personal laptop and I want the same stuff on my personal laptop, I can just do it. And so that's really why. And I'm quite glad I've done it.
So has everything kind of worked? Have you managed to get everything that you had into a NYX configuration?
No. There are some quirky bits, but it's a learning process. It's functional. I can do my job. I've got a web browser and a terminal. What more do you need? Well, I also have a text editor and a load of other apps that companies these days use for things like tracking meetings and taking notes and recording videos and all that kind of stuff that come as part of the list of approved tools that you will need to do this job. And there was a lot of overlap between those tools and the tools I had for my previous job, or tools that I would have installed anyway. And thankfully, using this NYX configuration, it can pull stuff from multiple different places. It's not just you have to look in NYX packages. Like, it's able to go and look in Brew, and it's able to look in other places. And that's something I hadn't realized. You know, part of the reason I was a bit reticent was, what if the package is not in a NYX package? What if the thing I need is not available? It turns out pretty much all of it is. There's only one or two things that I've installed off-piste, but most of it I've been pretty disciplined and made sure that when I install something, I take a step back and don't just dive straight into the package manager or the app store or go online and find a file to download and run. I don't do that. I take a step back and think, no, what would Martin do? And then I edit the Nix config and I search for the package on the Nix package search website, which is easy enough to use, and I can understand how that works. And just so long as there's a package for the right architecture and the right OS, it's fine. It's not a biggie.
And if there's not, you can do the same with Brew, because Nix can manage the Brew file that right. you need to use to fill the gaps in.
Yeah. The tricky things so far have been configuration, actually managing the configuration of the applications. The one that I'm having trouble with at the moment is there's a little application called AutoRaise that I use, which is very much like Focus Follows Mouse on Linux, but on the Mac. I just move my mouse over a window and it raises it and I can start typing without having to click. And I use that a lot. I just throw the mouse all around the place and start typing. I'm quite familiar with that workflow on Linux and Mac. And AutoRaise has a configuration panel in the GUI version, but the one that comes from Nix doesn't have that GUI for some reason. I don't know why, but I only installed that today.
Okay.
So I'll figure it out, but it's a slow process. But once I got it right, I think I'll be happy. I'm already pretty happy with it, and I can update all my apps with just a couple of commands, and I'm pretty pleased with that.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting, because when you said at the beginning you made a list of what was on the old computer, you literally did. You typed them all out into a text editor, and you figured, yes. And you went off, and I said, go to this website, it'll tell you if this package is available in Nix or not. And you built a list, and you were like, all of this stuff is in Nix, and these things are not, but they're in Brew.
Also, the names of them, like, the names are slightly different in different places, right. Just like they would be, you know, for anyone. Like
Fedora versus Debian or whatever.
Yeah,
like.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So, I helped you. In fact, you scaffolded your first flake, and then I sort of gave it a bit of, je ne sais quoi, you know, some of the things I've learned to make it easier to manage. But then it was literally just a case of taking your list and pasting the names of the packages into a list of packages in places.
Yeah.
And then, as you say, some of the things you have configuration language and you can configure them. And one of the things that I copied over to yours is sort of, we talk about this sort of, you know, meander down the A to Z of modern Unix, but my Nix configuration for the terminal is that, you know, this is where I get these things from. And you've just inherited that with all of the theming and deep configuration all in one go.
Imagine opening a terminal, pressing backspace, and holding it down to delete two characters and it going wham and deleting the whole line because Martin has his auto repeat rate ludicrously fast.
Yeah, I don't mess around. I haven't got time to wait for turbo lag.
I feel like I'm a much faster worker. I'm much more efficient now. I can delete things so much faster. So maybe more about this in a future episode, but so far on day two of Alan's new job with his new laptop, everything's working.
Have you become a Nix bore yet?
I did drop the mention of Nix when someone said, oh, just install this thing. Here's a link. And I was like, no. I don't think so.
This is not how one rolls.
No. And I lifted up my standing desk and then gave him a lecture. yeah, it probably sounded like that. But no, it's fine. I did mention Nix. Thankfully, I don't sit in the office near all the engineers who would have all nodded sagely in my direction, no doubt, and like doffed their fedoras at me. But yeah. It's all good. And I'll be sharing. I've shared the config. It's on GitHub and I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay.
But yeah, thanks, Martin. I really appreciate it because I'm learning all the way. And yeah, it's quite exciting stuff.
Yeah, we learn and win together. So I recently talked about Nala and how I'd been using that in an Ubuntu-based project to add some panache to the terminal experience. Well, in that project, I have been writing some of my own tooling, and I wanted that tooling to have some panache as well. And we've talked about things like nerd fonts in the past, in particular when we were talking about Powerline and Starship and having sort of these graphical expressions of your status in the terminal and all the rest of it, and things like BTOP, you know, with the use of pseudo braille characters to do graphs and what have you. But the issue is that if you're writing something that's at the very beginning of somebody's journey in a terminal experience before they've got a rich environment like Alan now does with his glorious Nix configuration, where all of his fonts are configured. You've got limited options to sort of inject a little bit of graphical flair into the terminal. And your only option is to use Unicode, because that is sort of universally rendered without you having to have any special fonts installed. But it is really hard to go and find characters and glyphs and things in the vast library of Unicode glyphs that you can use in these tools. And I'd been using a website which looks like it hasn't had an update since DHTML. It came into existence on Internet Explorer 4.
It's about the right time frame for panache. That was a perfume from that kind of era. Every time you say panache, I'm thinking of those terrible TV adverts from the 1980s. It feels about right.
Yeah, I can almost smell panache as you say it. Yeah, indeed. And it's like walking through the duty-free area at an airport. You know, none of those scents were ever intended to be smashed together like that.
Yes.
So I've been using some of these websites. Most of them you can't really search very well at all, or you can't copy and paste, or they're literal like JPEG images of characters. So, you know, it's just a nightmare. And I found one which you could kind of use, but it got a pop-up and it was never in the right place. And it covered over like about 16 other glyphs. So you couldn't actually see what you were looking at. It was deeply frustrating. And I snapped eventually and decided I'd had enough of this nonsense. And damn it, I was going to write my own. So I have been on a side quest in order to make my terminal application fancy. I have created a web application called Glyph Party.
Okay.
And Glyph Party is a beautiful and efficient way to search the massive library of Unicode glyphs and find them and copy and paste them and find all of the information you need so you can lift them out and drop them in your terminal applications.
So it's a big grid with loads of characters in it with information like the name of the character, like double dagger and bullet and so on, and the Unicode combination of numbers and stuff for drawing that thing, whatever it is. And I started scrolling because it's a big list, right? I started scrolling. I could see my scroll bar moving and I thought, well, this isn't a very big list. I get to the bottom and it says, yeah, this is the first 500 of 10,000 characters.
Yeah, that's like, a lot of them.
Yes, okay. All right.
Yeah. So yeah. So at the top of Glyph Party, there is a search, a bit like, you know, using Kargi or Google to search for things. So you can do a text search, and the Unicode characters don't have what I would describe as like a rich text description. So it's kind of frustrating to do that. But they are broken down into sort of block. I think what they call them is blocks and characters. So I think the characters are by language or dialect or whatever the sort of the visual equivalent of a dialect is. So if you know you're looking for arrow-related things, there is a whole, no, whatever, several blocks of arrow glyphs, and you can just jump straight in there. And there's another whole bunch around chess pieces and mahjong pieces and playing cards and various other things. So if you know what you're looking for, you can jump into those sections. And if you can't, the search can get you in the right area a lot of the time.
So you were saying about wanting to be able to, you know, inject some graphical flair into a terminal before you've got fonts and stuff configured.
Right.
Now, a lot of this on the web is showing like colourful emoji for things.
The tofu character and stuff, yeah.
So if I wanted to include, for example, U plus 1F9CB bubble T in my terminal application, would that just work without having everything else? Or do you have to limit yourself to a subset of what's on here when you're doing what you're doing right now?
You do have to limit yourself to a subset. So if you remember in Windows from the past, they had a font called Wingdings, I think it was called.
I remember.
So I think that font is kind of like what's available in the Unicode sort of standard characters. So if you choose characters that render readily in the browser on your computer, you should be fine in the terminal. And generally, I'd say sort of 99 times out of 100, if I lift one out and I run it remotely somewhere, it renders correctly. But there's also, Unicode covers a whole raft of stuff, some really unusual dialects. So you will just see broken glyphs for those, because unless you've got the font installed for whatever these esoteric languages are, they won't render. So you have to limit yourself to the ones that do. And when I went looking at, I think Claude Code does this. If you've used Claude Code and you've issued a command, you see a whole bunch of sort of pulsating flowers and stars and things. They are all in this standard set of Unicode glyphs that you can now find through Glyph Party. And that's one of the ways I've been using them, is I've found there's all of these shapes that sort of grow and rotate slightly, and you can stitch together to make interesting spinner animations for I'm doing something now, and you can get a bit creative with them.
This is rather super. I assume it's open source, because I've got a couple of bugs that I want to report. And
yes, it is open source, MIT licensed.
Lovely. So I've just done a search for a couple of things, and one of the things I've noticed, if I search for bum, I find there is a glyph called equals sign with bumpy, and I would expect to hover over that and it have a pop-up. But if I click it, it copies it to the clipboard, which is super convenient. You just click it, mm-hmm. and then paste it where you want it. And there's a little thing in the corner that you click, and it gives you the details where you can copy the Unicode, the character, or copy HTML, which is really cool, and gives you the full name of the thing. So mm-hmm. this particular one is called equals sign with bumpy above. And it looks like, is it Nottingham Forest?
Yeah.
I don't know what. Anyway. That one has me obsessed now, and I'm going to use that for everything, especially with the word bumpy in it. But that's, I love this. This is really cool.
Yeah. So I looked at the original website, and it had got a massive JavaScript file of all of this, like Unicode index of all of the things. And I thought, well, there's my database of stuff. And it, I think it was dated like 2023. And then I thought, oh, actually, before I start using this, maybe I should see if there's like other databases of Unicode. And of course there are. Like, you know, there are these superheroes of open source that have got a massively niche interest, which is maintaining, you know, these databases of Unicode stuff. So idiots like me can go and smash a load of random characters into the terminal to make it look pretty. I mean, that's probably not why they're doing it. They're probably doing it because they are from one of these locales where they have, you know, exotic characters, and they need to be able to see them on their computer screen. But there are people that are contributing to this stuff.
You insensitive clod. These are like letters of the alphabet that they need to see.
Exactly, yeah. But, you know, I look at it and I think, well, that looks interesting. I'm going to use that. You know, I'm going to make that yellow and make it blink on and off because it looks pretty in my application.
Nice.
But, yeah, I found a library. It's called something like UCD LibJS or something. And it's massive. So my first sort of trick was, well, how do I carve that up into an optimized thing so you can load it in a browser? Because I didn't want to make a massively complicated web application. This is a single HTML page and a single bit of JavaScript, and then the library of Unicode, which has been sort of carved up and organized by block and character regions and stuff like that. But most importantly, it uses the Capuchin palette and color scheme, which is what makes it totally beautiful and fits in with my desktop and terminal experience. So my Glyph Party application fits right in alongside all of the other stuff that I have on my machine.
And thanks to you, it fits in with my laptop.
Indeed, it does now, yes. So, yeah, it's available on my website, glyphparty.wimpiesworld.com. We'll have a link to that and to the source code on GitHub. So if, like Alan, you have already found bugs, please file an issue, or better yet, send me a patch.
We love to get your feedback via email, show@linuxmatters.sh, or you can chat with us and other listeners in our Telegram group. All the details are at linuxmatters.sh/contact. I have taken myself back down the rabbit hole of one of my favourite games ever, and I've started playing RimWorld Odyssey.
I've seen this title around over the years, and it looks interesting, but I've never purchased it because I wanted I didn't want to explain the receipt to my wife. So what is RimWorld Odyssey all about?
So RimWorld Odyssey itself is the latest DLC for the base game RimWorld, which you're right, it's been around. And in fact, I think I spoke about it previously on the Ubuntu podcast during one of our Foss Talk Live shows.
Uh-huh.
So that gives you an idea of, you know, its vintage. So it's a colony simulator where basically you are a group of survivors in various scenarios stranded on a planet, and you have to build shelter and gather resources and craft stuff and survive and hopefully eventually build a ship and escape the planet. But graphics-wise, it's quite lo-fi. It's all sort of top-down view, and your people are all just sort of little, almost like cut-out paper pawns who whiz around the screen. You know, two-dimensional, quite simple graphics, but quite complex systems in terms of things you can craft and also the relationships between your characters and the things that happen to you. So it's actually, like the title page says, it's not a game, it's a story engine, because you can pick when you set up your game sort of the parameters for how it will play. And there's a lot of different random events that affect, you know, how people interact with each other and the kind of relationships they form, how that makes them feel. And then you've got to manage all of their feelings so that they don't start fights with each other and things like that, or they don't get depressed. And it's a really sort of rich game for something with quite simple looking graphics.
So this is not a genre that I gravitate to, but the way you've just described it sounds like it's got sort of overtones of Dwarf Fortress in the way that you've just laid it out there.
Yes, it's that sort of a game, I think. Yeah, but with a sort of sci-fi-ish setting. And the way that the base game works is you're given the world and you pick a hex on the world where you're going to set up your colony, where your survivor's going to land or whatever. And then you have that bit of the map for your base, and you've got to build your colony there and gather the resources in that bit of the map. But then you're kind of limited to what's there and what you can grow there and what you can trade with others from other bits of the world. You can form caravans and go on expeditions and gather stuff from other places and bring it back. But that's basically it. You've kind of got to do the best you can with the resources that you picked. But RimWorld Odyssey changes that completely by giving you a ship which you can move around the planet.
Mm.
So what this means is you build your base and then you can take the entire base with you.
Well, like that.
And go to a different biome entirely, or a place with a whole new fresh resources. But the fly in the ointment of that is that you're being pursued by mechanoids. And every couple of months, they work out where you are and you get a warning that they're coming and you need to move on. So what you can't do is build up a massive base in one place and then go to the next place and build up a massive base there. You have to do as much as you can in that time, improve your ship as much as you can so you've got more to take with you, and then move on before you get killed.
So there's always that anxiety, you've only got so long and you've got to make as much opportunity of the time you have wherever you've gone to.
Yes. So while in the base game, you might focus a lot on growing lots of crops, which take lots of time, you might have to have more of a sort of a hunter-gatherer style of sustenance.
What's the UI like? Is it select, use a mouse to select a group of blobs and give them instructions, or is it clicking individual, or is it, you know, they all just do a thing? Are you micromanaging each individual blob, or are you grouping blobs and doing them like Command and Conquer style?
You can micromanage individual people, but actually you have more of a sort of a priority system. So as you say what needs to be done, what you want to build, what crafting you want to happen at each station, you can then look at your colonists, see who has what skills, and then say where they should prioritize different jobs, and they will work out for themselves what they want to do next. So you might say that you want your person who has the best research skill to prioritize research above everyone else, then they'll sit at the research table all the time, while someone else might do the butchery and the cooking and the crop raising and so on.
And how does the whole relationship thing work?
Everyone has different traits, so they might have different sexualities, different personality types, different, and not quite political things, but, you know, different views on stuff, things they like, things they don't like. And then when they're in the same place together, they'll interact with each other. They might flirt with each other. They might insult each other, and then they'll either like or dislike each other. And then as things happen to people they like or dislike, that affects how they feel. So like one thing which I've had is one of my characters is bisexual and he will basically make a pass at anyone else in the colony all the time and gets knocked back a lot. And therefore he's then quite unhappy because he's been making advances at people and everyone's been knocking him back and everyone else is unhappy that they've had to knock him back.
He needs to be a bit more picky. You should tell him.
Well, this is the thing. One of the things which is a bit annoying is you can't say, leave that person alone. They said no. Like, they will keep trying. And then you've got to manage the fact that they both end up unhappy as a result.
So you have to deal with the consequences, but you can't control, like, the input that's creating these.
Right? You don't have a button that says unconscious people don't want tea or no?
It's not as bad as that.
Okay.
And then you might have people form relationships and then... That's great because then they share a room together, so you don't need as many bedrooms. But then they might cheat on each other.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
This sounds like the most annoying Tamagotchi ever.
And all the while you're trying to build up the capacity to go and fight a bunch of mechanoids orbiting the planet.
And if they get you, will they definitely wipe you out? Can you defend yourself in any way? Can you build defenses against them?
No, it basically says... So the idea of the game is to get strong enough so you can go and take out their hive. But it basically says if they find you and get you before you run away, you're gone. I haven't let it happen to see, but I'm pretty sure it's not something you could defend against.
That's end game scenario if they catch you. Right.
Exactly.
Very reminiscent of Battlestar Galactica to me.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah. There are smaller like raids from other factions which you have to defend yourself against. So as a sort of a regular thing, something will happen, like a raid or a pack of animals that come and attack you. One of my people nearly got killed by a pack of vicious swans the other day.
Vicious swan. Somebody wrote that into the game.
Well, it can happen with any animal and you don't know. And then suddenly, usually they appear at the edge of the map and you've got time to get everyone inside and turn on all your like guns. And then as they arrive, they get shot and then you've got loads of nice meat to butcher. But in this case, because swans can fly, they go about three times the speed that your people can move. And it won't cook enough.
Oh, that sounds like it didn't end well, Mark.
No. Hey, someone rescued him. We put him in hospital. We gave him the medicine that I managed to make. So it was all good. But yes, I would. If anyone's played RimWorld before and not gone back to it for a while, I would highly recommend checking out RimWorld Odyssey. It's also the perfect Steam Deck game because it's a really great one to just sit on the sofa and just sort of semi-idle at while you're watching TV with the family or whatever else. You can just have it and check back it every now and then. And it's a really good one.